saviest. The question comes in my mind, what next? What next? What next?
The final victory.
There are references to a person who will come as the savior of mankind.
I know he's one of the Ahlul Bayt and the last one, and he's going to change the world.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Last Savior. This is IRIB English Radio. I'm with Dr. Karimi. And we're discussing about Yamani. Well, Dr. Karimi, before going to the break, you said that we only have one narration in this regard, that believers have to go and help Yamani if he asks for help. What do we conclude? Like, we only have one narration, so what do we conclude about that?
For that, we need to refer to other narrations in this regard, talking about the duty of Muslims and the Shia at the time of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi, alayhi salam. We said that the uprising of Yamani and that of Sufyani are very close to the time of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi.
Yeah.
So it seems that to support Yamani does not necessarily mean to go and join his army in Yemen.
Okay.
We may support him through many other ways, but doesn't mean that necessarily we should go to Yemen.
Travel to Yemen.
To join his army. It seems from other narrations that the answer is negative. And as Shia, we have no duty to go. Yes, for people around him in Yemen, and people who would see him, they may join the army.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the duty of all the people all around the world to go to Yemen to help Yamani.
Okay.
And this is a very important point in our time. So this false claimant from Basra claimed that all Muslims come and aid me and help me. No, the narrations are against that. What are the narrations? The narrations I'm talking about are asking the Muslims that at the time of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, try to go to the city of Mecca.
Okay.
So the point is that we proved that based on the narrations, the uprising of Yamani and that of Sufyani are very close to the time of reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam.
Yes.
And according to some narrations, he will see Imam Mahdi, he will help him, and according to some, he will be one of the rulers at his time. We will come to that. So the narrations talking about the time of the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, and this is mentioned in many narrations, asked the Muslims and the Shia to go to the city of Mecca.
There's no narration telling us that travel to the city of Yemen.
Exactly.
So if we have something regarding traveling, it's towards Mecca.
Yeah, I mean, it's contradicting the claim that people need to go to Yemen. When the narrations are asking the people to go to Mecca.
All right.
I would like to share some narrations in this regard because they have some interesting points. For example, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam says, "Kafa bis-Sufyani niqmatan lakum min adawwikum." As an enemy, Sufyani is enough for you. Man arada minhum, we'll talk about Sufyani later, the main goal of Sufyani is just to massacre the Shia.
Alright.
Man arada minhum an yakhruj, yakhruj ila al-Madina, aw ila Mecca, aw ila ba'd al-Buldan. If the Shia want to get rid of Sufyani, they need to go to some cities like Medina, Mecca, or other cities. Then he said, then Imam says that it's better for you not to go to Medina because the army of that wicked person, that is Sufyani, will attack Medina too.
All right.
وَلَكِنْ عَلَيْكُمْ بِمَكَّةَ فَإِنَّهَا مَجْمَعُكُمْ. You need to go to Mecca because this is the place that you will gather together. This is in Al-Ghiba by Nuhmani, page 311. Chapter 18, Hadith number 3.
We would interpret and make a conclusion out of these narrations in another session with you. Thank you so much for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
War criminal and psychotic lawyer, Prime Minister-elect of the Zionist entity Benjamin Netanyahu utilized the Saudi Al Arabiya channel in his first interview with an Arab media outlet to launch a series of very traditional lies, dull to the point of political disgust. Netanyahu seemed like a gullible, spoiled brat with that interview, tried to play smart about the peace process, the Palestinian cause, and the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia, claiming that he will discuss the deterioration of the kingdom's relations with the Biden administration. Oh, isn't he Mr. Fix-It-All? During the interview on Thursday, December 15, 2022, he said, "I think we are facing the possibility of not just expanding peace. I think we can have a new peace initiative that would constitute a quantum leap to achieve a solution to both the Arab-Israeli conflict and ultimately the Palestinian-Israeli conflict." Then, in what seems like a monologue out of a Disney movie, Netanyahu said, "I'm referring to what could be a truly wonderful historic peace with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and that peace with Saudi Arabia will change our region in unimaginable ways." Netanyahu spoke about a wonderful historic peace, but only after Saudi Arabia presents all its cards to normalize its relations with the Zionist entity. But is either side here thinking about how such a normalization will affect all the Islamic world, not only Palestine? Only if Al Arabiya journalists would complete their job and ask him what is the type of that peace he sees that would resolve the Arab-Israeli conflict and put an end to the Palestinian calamity. Does it include recognition of United Nations Resolution 1967 of 2012 on the state of Palestine according to the borders that came in the text of that resolution? And does he consider President Mahmoud Abbas a true partner in peace? But that brings the question whether Mahmoud Abbas is the legitimate representative of the Palestinian struggle at this day and age. Or maybe will Netanyahu's government commit to stopping all forms of Judaization of Palestinian areas? Or will his government consider Al-Quds an occupied land that will be the capital of the state of Palestine? Or will they end once and for all the issue of the outcasted Palestinians who took refuge in countries all over the world and negotiated in accordance with international law? Does this historic peace include stopping the Zionist entity from expanding illegal colonial settlements in the West Bank, or halting its continuous murderous aggression against the largest open-air prison on earth known as the Gaza Strip? These are just some of the clear questions that would define the essence of that wonderful historic peace that Netanyahu spoke of. But it all comes down to this. Does Mohammed bin Salman care about any of the above-mentioned inquiries to begin with? Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. The official Saudi Al Arabiya channel, the Zionist Prime Minister designate Benjamin Netanyahu appeared speaking about the upcoming normalization between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the Zionist entity. There's no embarrassment anymore in the appearance of Zionist personalities on Saudi channels, despite the series of lies that those in power inside Saudi Arabia stressing that there is no legalizing relations with the occupation so far. To discuss this issue with us from the occupied West Bank is Dr. Amal Wahdan, human rights advocate. Thank you for being with us. Dr. Amal, now, Netanyahu spoke with Al Arabiya. That was not a surprise for me, at least. But in the interview, which was posted on its English language website, he said, and I quote, "A new peace initiative aimed at establishing a wonderful, historic peace with Saudi Arabia." Why is Saudi Arabia doing this move right now, and I mean having him on the national TV, if they don't want to normalize?
Well, I think that Saudi Arabia is not in a rush to do such a move, such a huge move. Especially if we take into consideration the global arena and the developments, especially the last OPEC Plus meetings And the differences that start to float between Saudi Arabia and the USA. So I think the Saudis are, you know, just trying to give, but not wholly, because they know that there is a lot in stake if they do go in full normalizations with the Israelis. If they can do behind the scenes relationships and, you know, Israeli airplanes flying over Saudi Arabia, this is something that is not going to harm them much, although they lost, in front of the, at least the Arab nationals and the axis of resistance. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, going fully normalization with the Israelis is a little bit risky for them. It's like, suiciding, because they will lose a lot. But if they can manage these relations away from fully normalizations, I think they will go for it. Actually, on last July, the foreign minister of Saudi Arabia said that there is no normalizations with Israel, I quote, until two-state solution with the Palestinians. And this was like a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And this should be based on UN resolutions and withdrawal from other countries as well. I don't think that the Saudis are ready to make this lead.
Which is why, if we go to the interview, we see that Netanyahu is stressing that peace with Saudi Arabia, and I quote, will change the region in unimaginable ways. In what ways does it mean? I mean, the Abraham Accord with the UAE and Bahrain have changed nothing so far, and the proof, especially about the Arab sentiment during the World Cup that we saw in Qatar 2022, was against such normalization and in support of Palestine. So what does Netanyahu exactly mean by saying it will change the region?
We all know that Netanyahu is good in PR. He tries to impress the coalition. He's trying to impress the people inside the colonial apartheid regime in Palestine. But he cannot go ahead with this step before the Saudis before the Saudis give him this ticket to go ahead. They know the complications, and they are fully aware that this PR show that he makes in front of the TV, and I'm sure maybe he pressed a lot to make this interview with Al Arabiya and other Arab networks, I don't think that it's gonna happen, and I don't think even with the problems that Netanyahu is facing forming this government, even with the ultra-nationalist, ultra-zealous parties in this coalition, I don't think that he is capable of even making this government. He has 2 days left on the 21st. If he doesn't succeed, mm-hmm. he will not be able to make this government happen. So I don't think that it goes beyond, it will go beyond this PR show that he's trying to make.
I hear you, what you're saying. It is basically a PR campaign by Netanyahu to boost the polls on the inside of the occupied territories. But earlier last week, we did hear Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu revealing that he recently visited Arab countries that do not maintain relations with the Zionist Israeli entity. Everyone was suspicious that it might have been the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, but not a word was uttered against it or with it. What will the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia be risking in specific at this moment in time, if they go along with whatever Netanyahu is pushing them towards, especially with this kind of normalization, what is the riskiest move that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia can make at this current moment in history?
We know that Saudi Arabia is trying, to lead the Arab and somehow the Muslim world. So if they do this such step, it's gonna hinder and it's gonna really endanger their relations together with the Arab world and with the rest of the Muslim world. I do think that with the differences and the quarrels that they started to have after the OPEC Plus and even before with the Biden administration, and before that, we should remind people about the amount of insult and humiliation that Mohammed bin Salman had with the previous administration. So all this is not being silenced. One of the reporters, Israeli reporters actually, quoted bin Salman reminding Biden of Shirin Abu Akleh murder. Mm-hmm. When Biden was bickering at him about Khashoggi, he immediately pointed out the brutal killing of Shirin Abu Akleh. So the amount of differences and the amount of quarrels, even though we know that the Americans are not letting Saudi Arabia go to the east with the Russians and the Chinese. So now they feel like they have to balance their relations on the international arena. Inside the occupied territories, inside historic Palestine, the confrontations and the amount of aggression that the Israelis are enforcing against the Palestinians has also its weight. Whether this move is going to bring peace and stability, as Netanyahu is saying, or it would accelerate the confrontations and elevate even the armed struggle in the West Bank.
Definitely, we have to wait and see then what will be the reply or response of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia to such a push from Netanyahu. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Amal Wahdan, human rights advocate, for joining us from the West Bank to talk about this issue. I wish you the best. Now, please stay tuned, because next we will be talking about how might Mohammed bin Salman reciprocate to the calling of Netanyahu. Will he approve or not? Next.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
After the recent electoral victory of Zionist Israeli Prime Minister-elect Benjamin Netanyahu, along with other right-wing Israeli politicians, his first foreign policy move was towards the conservative Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which houses Mecca, the holiest place for Muslims. Netanyahu's first time on an Arab TV channel was used and abused to push the kingdom into accepting what Netanyahu deemed a quantum leap for peace. Will Mohammed bin Salman take that leap and join the Abraham Accord without securing any gains for the Palestinians? More in this following report.
With a tense atmosphere inside the Israeli entity as the formation of the Zionist government approaches and security in the Palestinian areas continue to decline, Zionist Prime Minister-designate Benjamin Netanyahu will need to bring forth a real achievement to ensure his new government withstands these circumstances. As countries in West Asia move to reposition themselves to face new perceived threats, considering the ongoing war in Ukraine, a major new deal, and one previously considered implausible, appears to be emerging as per Netanyahu himself during his first appearance on an Arab TV channel, the Saudi Al Arabiya. Netanyahu openly spoke during the interview that he can strike an unprecedented peace deal with the conservative kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which houses Mecca, the holiest place for Muslims, and a country that still has its schoolbooks referring to the Zionist occupation as the Zionist enemy. When one approaches the issue to analyze the facts, one can see that it is actually Netanyahu who desperately needs this type of deal with the kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and hence used his appearance on Al Arabiya to drag the kingdom into a deal that would ease the pressure of Netanyahu's already unborn government, which this time includes Zionist hardliners who have never made it to power yet. This fact has already made way for Netanyahu's opposers to voice their genuine fear of how the arrival of hardliners will only escalate the confrontation with the Palestinian resistance. It is true that warming relations with the Israeli entity have also been a recognized approach for Arab regimes whenever they face internal challenges, with a view to drumming up American and Western support against local opposition by appearing moderate, open, and tolerant. Three words now highly valued by Arab regimes facing survival issues. Netanyahu had already delivered a precious historic deal in August and September 2020 with the so-called Abraham Accords. It began with decisions taken by the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain to enter into peace agreements with Israel. Sudan and Morocco followed soon thereafter. But what exactly did any of the signatories achieve since then? What did Israel really benefit from when the most important factor being the popular support was nowhere to be found, as evident by the FIFA World Cup that took place in Qatar, showcasing the Arabian public's support of the Palestinian cause and their disapproval of the Abraham Accord or anything that resembles it? Many analysts believe that Bahrain's deal with Israel could have only come about with a green light from Saudi Arabia, considering the close relationship between Manama and Riyadh. Many observers also believe that more steps will be taken to ease normalization between the Zionists and the Saudis following Biden's visit to Saudi Arabia, but rather what came was a massive dispute between Biden and Mohammed bin Salman following OPEC Plus's decision to reduce oil production. Put simply, Saudi Arabia does not have to fully enter the Abraham Accords to be a part of the Arab world's trend towards normalization, despite the ongoing deals of the Red Sea islands of Tehran and Sanafir and lifting restrictions on Israeli airlines using its airspace and featuring Netanyahu on Al Arabiya channel. But whether Netanyahu will be satisfied with just that remains to be seen.
Now to discuss this issue with us right here from Beirut is Ali Murad, journalist at Al Akhbar News Daily and political commentator and researcher. Thank you very much, Ali, for being with us. Now, Saudi Arabia has already lifted restrictions on Israeli airlines to use Saudi airspace, and Tel Aviv has also approved the transfer of the Red Sea islands of Tehran and Sanafir from Egypt to Saudi Arabia. I don't know why they had to approve, but that's how it's done. And now Saudis watched Netanyahu on their national Al Arabiya channel. Isn't all that already normalization?
No doubt that when such a Saudi broadcaster interviews a war criminal like Netanyahu is enough evidence for the presence of a normalization between both entities, which has been there already for many years now and possibly many decades. There is nothing new here. What is new actually is the regime inside Saudi Arabia decided to patch up the level of indicators that prove the existence of a previous relationship. And it proves the existence of ambition and willingness to move forward in the process of normalization and its announcement. Of course, the Zionist side is the most expressive of the existence of this relationship, and the announcement of the steps that, from the Zionist perspective, are considered advanced within the framework of the Declaration of Normalization. While on the Saudi side, we always see that there is an expression of a declaration of readiness for normalization, but they verbally invoke the rights of the Palestinians. But in fact, the Saudis want something related to their own interests in exchange for announcing normalization. This is the rule from which we must proceed when analyzing when Saudi Arabia will announce official normalization with the Zionist enemy. The issue is related to US protection. All the events that have taken place in the region, especially in the past 5 or 7 years since Mohammed bin Salman came to power in Saudi Arabia, indicate that he is ready, enthusiastic and completely convinced of normalizing relations with the Israeli enemy. But he links the issue with what he wants from the Americans, especially in them providing him the umbrella of protection he needs, primarily against his own people. Because the main fear of these dictatorial regimes comes from the fear from their own people, before they even talk about a danger that may come to them from abroad. And here they mean the revolutionary thought sponsored by the Islamic Republic of Iran in confronting the Zionist enemy, such as supporting the resistance movements. They see this revolutionary thought as a danger. Mohammed bin Salman wants to withdraw an American reaffirmation of the guarantees in the matter of protection in order to announce the steps of normalization. This was said by many Americans who visited Riyadh in the past months and years. Every once in a while, this matter is confirmed through what these officials and journalists say and write.
Listen to what you're saying, because Saudi Arabia's current position, especially the official one, is that it will not normalize relations with the Israeli entity unless and until the Palestinians have a sovereign and independent state based on the 1949 to 1967 borders. Now, the kingdom does not even mention Gaza. They don't mention the expanding of settlements. They don't mention what's going on in Jenin right now, nor the refugees and their right of return. But if the only thing that they want is a business deal, then why call it a peace deal?
As is well known, Saudi Arabia has already started trade relations with the Zionists. The NEOM project announced by Mohammed bin Salman has significant investments for the Israeli side. Also, all the projects announced by Saudi Arabia with Egypt in 2016 and 2017 of enhancing infrastructure like so-called King Salman Bridge between Tabuk and Sinai. This is all linked to the transfer of sovereignty over Tehran and Sanafir from the Egyptian side to the Saudi side. It was simply a preparation for the investment projects taking place between Saudi Arabia and the Zionist entity. I imagine that Saudi Arabia is still embarrassed by an issue related to legality. I mean, they believe and know that the moment they announce the political normalization agreement and conduct a diplomatic exchange with the Zionists, they know that this will damage their image in the Islamic world, in the sense that they are the protectors or custodians of the two holy mosques in Mecca and Medina. This issue was highly considered by the Saudi leadership, so they are going against the natural approach in the issue of normalization. They establish all the relationships that result from the normalization process in the first place, and the step of announcing normalization would be left for the last phase. This is what Netanyahu said in his interview with Al Arabiya. He said that Arabs have always believed that the solution should be done first with the Palestinians, and then comes a normalization of the Arab countries with Israel. Now, the so-called Abraham Accords have proven otherwise. So from their perspective, it is possible to establish relations and establish trade exchange and whatnot, and then later on the rights of the Palestinians can be discussed. Netanyahu is trying to promote the idea by showing how it happened with the UAE and Bahrain.
But there's one other thing that Netanyahu mentioned is the common foe for both entities here, which is the Islamic Republic of Iran, who Netanyahu vowed during the interview that, I quote, we'll do whatever it takes or whatever is necessary to stop Iran from having a nuclear arsenal, even without U.S. consent. But will that appeal to Mohammed bin Salman that, hey, we have a common enemy here, will that appeal to him? Or rather, the regional shifts might have already changed Mohammed bin Salman's priorities from this right now?
This announcement by Netanyahu is not new. He has been saying this since before 2009, when he came to power in the Zionist entity. Now he is trying to use this narrative only to capitalize on the current situation, as there is no progress in the nuclear negotiations between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the P5+1 countries. Netanyahu is trying to seize this moment in order to reassure the Saudis and others that this is a historic opportunity that must be seized. In my opinion, Saudi Arabia knows the dangers of declaring an open alliance with the Zionist entity in confronting the Islamic Republic of Iran and the regional resistance movements, although this alliance already exists under the table. For example, Saudi Arabia's classification of Hamas as a terrorist movement and all resistance movements as a terrorist movement, as well as the imprisonment of Hamas leaders in Saudi Arabia, was the best evidence and proof that Saudi Arabia is walking beside the Zionist entity in an alliance to confront the forces of liberation in the region, on top of which is the Islamic Republic of Iran. So I think Netanyahu is trying to make a showmanship, and he's good at that, by the way. He's good at taking advantage of circumstances, especially when there are certain heated events happening. Today, the situation in the Islamic Republic and Netanyahu's words about it and how he should benefit from this situation in partnership with the Saudis, in my opinion, is the biggest evidence that a large part of what concerns the relationship between the Zionist entity and Saudi Arabia has to do with the joint plans that are being implemented inside Iran.
يعني بالمخططات المشتركة التي يجري تنفيذها في داخل
إيران. Which brings to the table the weight and for the response of Mohammed bin Salman. How will it be? Will it be through the foreign ministry or will it be through him directly to this call by Netanyahu? I want to thank you very much, Mr. Ali Murad, journalist at Al Akhbar Daily newspaper, political commentator and researcher, for joining us to talk about this matter. And thank you, ladies and gents. Please do follow us weekly because we always have a new episode for you. That's why we'll see you again next week on the Media Stream. Salam.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
اگر آدم باورهایی داشته باشه که پای اون باورها واسطه.
If a person is faithful to true Islamic beliefs, then he or she can rise up for Allah's sake too. Hazrat Fatimatu Zahra was among such people who alone defended true Islam. She was alone, but she was linked to infinity. She was an eyewitness to the day of Mubahala, so she had confidence in her heart. On the day of Mubahala, the army of Allah was only 5 people, but they became victorious.
تو قصه لیلت المبیت پیغمبر به یک نفر بود تو هجرت به علاوه
In the event of Laylatul Mabi too, the Holy Prophet and Imam Ali alayhi salam were alone, but they were victorious in the battle with the infidels. Imam Ali alayhi salam slept in the bed of Prophet Muhammad to save his life. He was alone. However, he did his best to save Islam. Even in many battles of Prophet Muhammad against the infidels, the number of the army of Prophet was much lesser than that of enemy, but Prophet and his true companions were victorious. The conduct of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, Imam Ali alayhi salam, and Prophet Muhammad show us that rising up singly for the sake of Allah is possible. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about our program on Call of Islam page, IRIB English Radio, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Up to 35,000 homes across Britain are facing at least 24 hours without water after a surge in frozen burst pipes. Streets have been flooded in Sussex, Kent, Hertfordshire, Essex and Lancashire. Arctic temperatures have given way this week to a balmy 15 degrees centigrade. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. In Britain, tens of thousands of homes have been left without running water after thawing snow and ice caused a surge in burst pipes. Residents in Kent, Sussex, Hertfordshire and Essex have been forced to turn to bottled water as providers scrambled to restore supplies as households went more than 24 hours without running water. South East Water said as many as 15,000 properties had seen their running water disrupted, as they faced a 300% increase in the number of burst pipes than usual. This included Tunbridge Wells and surrounding areas. Meanwhile, Southern Water said properties in Kent were without running water, as many as 20,000 homes may have been impacted. Affinity Water said 8,000 of its customers, mostly in Hertfordshire and Essex, have had their supplies interrupted. In an update at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, 20th of December, the water company said, "We're deeply sorry for the distress and inconvenience that this incident is causing. Our teams worked throughout the night to fix the burst water main so that we can return supply to our customers." It added, "The repair is now complete, however, it's going to take time to get water flowing through the network and supply returns." The company previously commented on the cause behind the burst pipes. "On a normal winter's day, we extract, treat and pump an average of 520 million litres of drinking water a day to our customers. But during the past 24 hours, this has increased by 100 million litres to 620 million litres. This has resulted in many of our drinking water storage tanks, which hold treated water before it is pumped to our customers, going empty or very low. Although we planned for this, we cannot predict when and where pipes will burst and are reacting as quickly as possible." Residents in Broadstairs, Manston, Margate and Ramsgate in Kent woke up to no running water on Monday morning, but Southern Water have since said water supplies in these areas have almost fully returned after the burst water main was successfully fixed. Thousands of homes in Lancashire also reportedly had their water switched off on Monday due to burst pipes and leaks. Hilary Wills from Benenden in Kent said she first noticed her water was cut off in the morning. While it's just her and her husband in their home at the moment, she's expecting up to 12 guests in the next couple of days for Christmas. South East Water said, "We're still working hard to balance the demand for drinking water with supply following the cold snap. Some customers are experiencing intermittent water supplies and we're so sorry for any disruption that this may be causing." Bottled water stations were opened at a rugby club in Haywards Heath in West Sussex, a golf club in Crowborough and a leisure centre in Tunbridge in Kent. Snow and ice have been rapidly melting as temperatures increase after days of wintry conditions in the United Kingdom. Aviva, an insurance company, has urged people to watch out for water leaks as the weather becomes warmer and frozen pipes start to thaw. A Southern Water spokesperson said on Tuesday, "We are sorry for the distress and inconvenience caused to our customers by the disruption to water supplies in Thanet in Kent." A spokesperson for the RAC, Rod Dennis, warned that melting ice could lead to dangerous driving conditions. Rod Dennis of the RAC said, "With weather conditions in many places this week being almost the exact opposite of last week, drivers getting away for Christmas need to be on their guard." The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. Up to 30,000 homes across Britain are facing at least 24 hours without water after warm air from Madeira caused extraordinary rise in temperatures in Britain. The drastic change to milder weather has caused thousands of homes to be left without water, which could last until Friday, 23rd of December. Families in Morecambe and Lancaster in Lancashire are suffering leaks after freezing conditions gave way to 15 degrees Celsius temperatures, while astonishing video footage from Thanet in Kent shows water running in the streets. Meteorology expert from the University of Reading, Dr. Stephen Burt, called it an extraordinary rise of almost 20 degrees Celsius in just a few days, after his hometown of Reading rose from minus 5 degrees Celsius last week to 12 degrees Celsius yesterday. Residents in part of Morecambe and Lancaster in Lancashire are facing 24 hours without water after a number of leaks and burst pipes. United Utilities says it's due to freezing conditions giving way to warmer weather. It's providing bottled water at three locations for its customers. Stephen Burt, the meteorology expert from the University of Reading, said very mild and humid tropical maritime air from the region of Madeira transported quickly north and eastwards to our islands because of the development of a major North Atlantic depression over the past few days. The Met Office has issued a yellow weather warning for rain across much of southern England and Wales. Customers in East Grinstead in West Sussex have been cut off, as well as large areas of Kent, and bottled water distribution stations have been set up. Southeast Water apologised for the pressure drop and said they needed demand for water to reduce. Our team of technicians are working around the clock using a variety of methods to reroute water around the network and ease pressure on our system. On a normal winter's day, we extract, treat and pump an average of 520 million litres of drinking water a day to our customers, but in the past 24 hours this has increased by 100 million litres to 620 million litres. This has resulted in many of our drinking water storage tanks, which hold treated water before it is pumped to our customers, going empty or very low. Although we planned for this, we cannot predict when and where pipes will burst and are reacting as quickly as possible. Experts warned last week that Britain would likely face a burst pipe Monday as temperatures rocketed after yesterday's so-called Snow Sunday chaos. The United Kingdom is shivering through one of the coldest Decembers for the past 122 years, with thermometers having averaged just a fraction of a degree above freezing so far this month. Experts warn today's thaw would see tens of thousands of homes suffer burst pipes.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on RIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at a very interesting question. This question is about the 190th verse of Surah Araf. In Surah Araf, verse 190, we read the following. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. فَلَمَّا آتَاهُمَا صَالِحًا جَعَلَ لَهُ شُرَكَى, which translates as, when we gave those two a righteous child, they set up partners for him, they set up partners for God. Some of the Quranic commentators and also some people in general who observe this verse and compare it with the verses which precede it, some have come to the conclusion that this verse is about the Prophet Adam, because a portion of the verse which precedes it refers to the Prophet Adam. And they say that what this verse means is that the Prophet Adam, when he was given a child, after his wife Eve bore a child, they became, these two, Adam and Eve, they became polytheists. And we know that this is contrary to the infallibility of the prophets, and therefore we cannot interpret this verse in this way. We have to come up with another alternative interpretation for this verse. So in response to this question, we can say that in this verse, God is not speaking about two people in particular, Adam and Eve. Rather, he is speaking about every mother and father in general, right? Usually a mother and father, when, you know, before they're even a child, they pray to God, they're very God-centric, God-fearing people, religious, you know, they're praying to God for, a good child. But once they're given the child, sometimes, a lot of times, they begin to compromise their religious beliefs for the, for what they believe is the betterment of the child, right? Like, for example, I remember when I was in high school, I had a friend, and it was Ramadan, and both of us were fasting, and we used to go to the library, because we couldn't go to the lunchroom because we were fasting, we used to be there. One day, I remember that towards the end of Ramadan, he never came. He stopped coming. And, I saw him later on and I asked him why he stopped coming. And he said, well, I wasn't fasting, so I decided not to come to bother you there while you were fasting. So I said, why did you stop fasting? And he said, well, he wanted to be a doctor and he had a big exam coming. And he said, my mom and my dad, they didn't allow me to fast because they thought that maybe if I fasted, I would have, did bad on my exam, and I couldn't have, it would have harmed the possibility of my becoming a doctor. Right, so it's an example. A lot of times this happens, we can say that this is something that happens with parents in general, it's not something that's becoming of the station of a prophet such as Adam. Specifically, God Almighty says, regarding Adam, سُمَّ اجْتَبَاهُ رَبُّهُ فَتَابَ عَلَيْهِ وَهُدَى وَهَدَى وَمَنْ يَهْدِ اللَّهُ فَهُوَ الْمُهْتَدِ. God chose him, and he turned towards him and guided him. And if somebody, God guides somebody, then he is guided. How could somebody who is guided by God become a polytheist? Right? This doesn't make sense. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at 190th verse of Surah Araf and its meaning. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.